Welcome to Books in the Freezer, a podcast dedicated to the deliciously disturbing world of horror fiction. I am your host, Stephanie, and today I am joined by a friend and returning guest, Quincy, to talk about speculative fiction, speculative horror. Welcome back.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's always fun to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we always talk about everything horror and Taylor Swift related, of course.
So. Of course. I'm sure she'll come up once, at least.
Right? Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe not. Please don't turn this off. Someone out there is like, no, I can't.
Yeah, right. Don't worry, we'll save it towards the end.
All right. So today we are talking speculative fiction. And why did you want to talk about speculative fiction today?
Yes. Yeah, so this is one of my favorite, I guess, subgenres of horror or even sci-fi, just because it does explore a lot of like landscape when it comes to like books and anything literary. But also it's a nice change up from like the A to B plot or storytelling formula, if you will. I like it because oftentimes it's like confusing almost, where you're left thinking and pondering and having to figure out, what did I just read? And but also I think it's a good device to really have bigger discussions about what you're reading in a more like interesting and fun way, you know.
So I definitely agree with all of that, because I was looking at the notes that I put in for all of mine, and there are things like, you are grappling with these concepts, this, you know, sci-fi element serves as a metaphor for this, and it's really helping you, the reader, grasp this concept and kind of put into the what if.
Yes.
And I know, I feel like people are probably going to be mad, because I feel like nailing down what speculative fiction is such a thorny subject.
It really is. I agree. And
we both of us looked at several different sources and several different things, and they all were different.
They are, like, we have to do our research on top of our research, and it's like there's no one answer for what it is, I feel.
Yeah, I looked at sites that were essentially, it's an umbrella term, and it's just anything that's a mix of horror, sci-fi, fantasy. Like, if it falls under any of those three, it could be speculative.
Keyword could be. Yeah. Like, you know, and I feel speculative is always that question, like, it could be this or that or whatever. So,
yeah. I will tell you personally, the way I always think of speculative, and again, this is just my rubric, is I kind of think of it in a Black Mirror-y sense. Like, it's, this is the real world except for this thing.
Yes.
That's kind of been my rubric, but I know that's not accurate to a lot of the definitions that I found. That's just always been the way I interpret it.
No, I am right there with you. I feel like, ever since a kid and getting into like reading and stuff, I always felt speculative was very much, oh, here's the problem, but we're looking at it through the lens of this impossible thing or a society or whatever the case may be, you know. That's kind of like the fun of it.
Yeah.
Like, how can we peel back the veil that is reality and reexamine what's going on? So,
yeah. I mean, thinking of it, like, one of my all-time favorite movies, I'm such a cliche, but it is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But essentially, it's like, this is the real world. This is our everyday reality, except for a surgery exists that can erase a whole person from your memory. And would you do that, because moving on is so painful? Like, have you ever been in so much pain that you think life would be better if I could just erase every memory I had with this person?
Yes, I don't blame you. That's a very good pick for this episode, I feel. But yeah, I don't know, I feel a lot of speculative stories do have plenty of like ambiguous like endings, and it's not just like sci-fi as the lens or horror as the lens. It's like, oh, let's take all these three, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy, combine them into like a thing. Yeah. And yeah, but no, I do love that movie though. It does bring up that question, like, would life be better if I could erase this person or memory or whatever?
And what if you keep coming back to each other?
Exactly. And then maybe the outcome's different, or who knows? So.
Oh, did you read Never Let Me Go or watch the movie?
So I did start it, but I started it like 3 times. And it's not because I don't like it. It's just because I've been busy, but it's there. I see it on my nightstand. But so far what I've read, I've enjoyed. But it's in the back of my mind always, just lurching.
So you haven't gotten to like the speculative element yet?
I haven't. I'm like way too like in the beginning stages of it. So yeah. But I know, I'm so sorry. I want to talk about it though. Just because I was looking to review it. Yes, well, I'll DM you. We'll have a separate discussion.
Because I know you, and I know you love an emotionally devastating read. And like adding in a speculative element, I mean.
Yes. I'll pay top dollar, you know, for that experience. So.
Yeah, so I was thinking about movies and shows that could be described as speculative, which was also tough to Google. This was not like an easy list to come up with for some reason. But Get Out definitely fits into this, where it's like, this is our normal reality, but what if this thing existed? Don't worry, darling. Like, what if we're in our normal reality, but what if? I can't spoil any of this stuff, so I'm like,
I know
a thing exists.
Exactly. But also, like, in speculative fiction, like, how do you actually like spoil something? You know, nothing's like dead set.
I don't know. With mine, it's I was telling you earlier, all mine are, and there's a dark secret behind why this is too good to be true. Yes. So I will not be spoiling what the dark secret is, but yeah. But I mean, yeah, like Black Mirror in general, like really playing with the idea of the effects that these technologies or these scenarios could have.
Yes, I agree. I think Handmaid's Tale, and me personally, I feel does fall under the umbrella. Yeah. It is in like a quote unquote near future and asks a lot of questions like, well, what if this was the world we live in, you know, or what if these rules were forced upon, you know, women and minorities, and of course I think we can all agree it's a little too close to home, so it's very much a good candidate for this episode.
Yeah. I'll talk about it in one of my picks, because it's comped with The Handmaid's Tale for similar reasons, and that they're both metaphors and stories for things that have already happened to women of color and people of color, and you know, things that are like what ifs, but they were things that already happened to people that were already in our history. So yeah, that's another element of this too.
One show I kind of wanted to discuss and get your opinion on is, you know, The Haunting of Hill House. I know it's, I mean, it is very much like just straight up horror, but in my mind, I think horror in this show is very much like the aesthetic, and the meat and potatoes of the show is this family and their relationship between one another and the grief they all feel together, but that they're all like pissed off about something and they all have their thing. But the horror is very much just, again, the lens we're looking at this through.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of questions as well that are coming up when I watch this show. But yeah, I do consider this like maybe even the outskirts of like speculative fiction. But I do kind of put it in there. So,
I mean, the case could be made for it. Speculative doesn't necessarily have to be like horror sci-fi. It's horror fantasy, which like the hauntings and the ghosts and stuff could fall into.
Yes. Yeah.
And, like metaphors for addiction and grief.
Exactly. There was one quote I actually found doing my research, and it's from an instructor, Lisa Wood. She teaches at was it, Southern New Hampshire University. And she says speculative fiction lives in the space where real life and make-believe collide and where the ghosts come out to play.
Okay.
You know? And then to me, ghosts are really like mistakes and traumas, yeah, and stuff like that. So that's very much Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I love that show.
Me too. Me too.
I've watched it through twice and I have cried every single time. I'm a crier though. I'm a crier.
Me too. Me too. And honestly, unapologetic crier. Yeah. That's who we are.
I went to go see Lisa Frankenstein in theaters. Mm-hmm. I did cry, yes, in Lisa Frankenstein. I also cried watching the trailer for the Amy Winehouse biopic.
Oh, I don't and blame
it,
you.
It doesn't show anything sad, but yeah, just knowing I cried in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. It's her legacy that left behind, and now we get something to kind of.
They did the shot that where she was at the Grammys and she won her, mm-hmm, first Grammy, and it was, mm-hmm, just recreating that moment, and I just, mm-hmm, burst into tears. So that's who I am.
I love that.
All right. Well, should we talk about some books?
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh my God. Okay. So my first book is The Center by Aisha Manazir. And you will be happy to know this. This is from Gillian Flynn's imprint.
Oh, okay.
And also, this is The Center, C-E-N-T-R-E, not E-R. It's the, like, I don't want to say fancier, European way, probably. The spell center. But this is about a woman named Anissa, who is a translator, and she dreams of one day translating works of great literature. But her current situation is just kind of working from home, sitting on her couch, subtitling Bollywood movies. Mm. And she has a boyfriend named Adam, who she thinks is just kind of very mediocre white man, except for he has this exceptional ability to learn languages. And they go on a trip to visit her family, and suddenly he speaks Urdu impeccably. Mm. Like over a weekend. And she finally is like, how are you doing this? What is your secret?
Yeah.
And so he finally tells her that there's this very exclusive program, The Center. It's very secretive. It's invite only. And if you're of someone who has used it, you have to sign a lot of NDAs and you only get one referral like in your life that you can use and cash in on.
Yeah.
But it guarantees fluency in 10 days in essentially any language you want. And it is expensive. You have to pay like a couple thousand dollars to do it. So she decides to do it and learn German, and she has to leave all of her belongings and live this kind of sparse existence where she's just immersed with these language studies. And 10 days later, she comes out fluent in German and is able to translate, you know, lost German works. Mm. And she just becomes really interested in this program and the center and enmeshing herself with higher ups in there and eventually learning what the secret is. Like, how is this possible? Yeah. What is making this work? And you'll never believe it. It's a dark secret.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
I really liked this book. I think this book is grappling with a lot of things. It's grappling with privilege and white supremacy and classism and appropriation in a way that really deals with like the prickliness of these things. Yes. It's very thought-provoking. Like, it's a book after I was done reading, I listened to the audiobook, and there was a Q&A with the author that even got me thinking more about things. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I didn't think about that. That's really good. I obviously don't want to say too much,
of course,
about what's going on, but just really interesting, really nuanced characters. And like as things were going on, it was one of those audiobooks where I was like finding things to do to like keep listening. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't just like sit on my bed and listen. I feel like now I need to like alphabetize my books, you know, like I need to like make tasks.
You were like very much like a madman in a jail cell, just walking back and forth. Like you need to do that in order to like listen.
Absorb the information.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say all of my books are definitely room temperature, but the content of them haunted me for several days. And I definitely like they were thought provoking and I thought about them. But on the scariness scale, I will say all of them are very approachable. There's nothing like horrifying. I really liked this. That is The Center by Aisha Manazir.
I think all my picks are very much room temperature as well, but the topics that we, you know, explore are very much intense and they linger and, you know, so. But spoiler alert, all three of my picks are short story collections. I do personally feel like if you were a newcomer to horror in general, but like speculative fiction, more specifically, I feel short stories are kind of a good way to get your feet wet, you know, and it gives you a good opportunity to just explore ideas quickly, I guess. But my first pick is Bliss Montage by Ling Ma. And this is a collection of 8 stories that are very, very different from the last. There's plenty of variety, but there's plenty of like speculative vibes, dark ambiguity mixed in, very dreamlike. But the genre, again, does act very much as a vehicle for bigger discussions. For example, we do explore topics like abuse and immigrant family relationships, toxic friendships, motherhood, or even the relationship one has with their own body. There are 2 stories I want to highlight really quick. I will keep them brief just because, again, they're short and it's very easy to like spoil something. But the first story is actually the one we open with, and it's called Los Angeles. And this is about a woman who lives in a mansion with her husband, as well as her 100 ex-boyfriends. What? All in the same house. Yes. Yes. I know. Very like out there and like, what is even going on? But this just does a good job of like introducing the reader of a woman kind of reevaluating her past relationships and how those can haunt you even years and years after the fact. So, and the second story I want to highlight is called G. And this is about 2 friends who reunite for an evening and they take a drug called G that turns you invisible. And it's a very simple premise, but it does shed light on what a toxic friendship looks like between 2 young protagonists and also the cultural expectations placed on women's bodies. For example, they do shed light on what does skinny expectations look like in America versus like in Asia. You know, there's like topics about that. So, but again, very room temperature. That's Bliss Montage by Ling Ma.
Well, Ling Ma wrote Severance, right?
Yes. Which would be another good option for this sort of topic. So,
Oh my gosh, when you were saying 100 Boyfriends, it reminded me of the song 100 Boyfriends by Alice Lung Hoo Gow. It's on Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. It's like a very like EDM-y like.
Oh, I'm into that. That could be a good like Final Girl-esque song for like that short story, probably.
Yeah. Everybody's jealous of my 100 boyfriends. Anyway.
I love it.
My second pick is a book I read this year. It came out last year. So far, it's going to be one of my favorites. Like, I have not stopped thinking about this book. And this is Natural Beauty by Ling Ling Huang. And we are following a woman who was a kind of piano prodigy at a conservatory. And her parents got into a debilitating accident. So now they're living full time at a recovery center. And she gets a job at a beauty and wellness store in New York City called Holistic with a K. Holistic. Like, it's a whole vibe. And I mean, it's a very bougie company. And, you know, she has roommates who are kind of like, how did you get that
job? Is it like Goop?
Yeah, like kind of. But it's, yeah, it's a store. And it's known for these very experimental and miraculous procedures, like, mm-hmm. you know, like permanent eyelash extensions mm-hmm. and like safer alternatives to Botox with like silkworms. And as employees, they have access to and are actively encouraged to try these. And so, you know, as she's working there, she's getting like trying these things for clear skin and skinnier mm-hmm. thighs and lighter hair. And she becomes friends with the niece of the owner and founder mm-hmm. of Holistic. And as you can imagine, becomes aware of some of the dark secrets yes, behind what is behind all of this. But this was just such a 5-star perfect story for me. Mm-hmm. Like, we're following this protagonist. We never learn her name. But, you know, as she's thrust into this thing that's pushing in this job where she's pursuing these beauty standards where everyone ends up looking the same, this kind of loss mm-hmm. of identity and loss mm-hmm. of culture. And her parents, you know, fled China in the wake of the Cultural Revolution and, you know, gave her this gift of art. And it's just, it's mm-hmm. so much. It's like exploring like consumerism and yes. race and loss of identity and, you know, beauty standards and the wellness and beauty industry and all these things. And I just absolutely loved it.
Oh my God, that sounds really, really good. Honestly, you sold it to me.
I really liked it. So yeah, that is Natural Beauty by Ling Ling Huang.
Sweet. My second pick is Boys Beasts Men by Sam J. Miller. If you are if you need really good queer literature, this would be a good one to pick up. The author is openly gay, and this collection has 14 stories that center around, you know, gay men and boys. And all these stories are very heartbreaking, imaginative, and very human, and very raw. But some of the topics we do get to explore are sex, homophobia, manhood, the AIDS crisis even, and grief itself. But the two stories I wanted to talk about from this collection, the first one is We Are the Cloud. And this is like a cyberpunk story about a young boy who wants only for someone to like care about him and love him. He's very much a loner while living in a society that doesn't care about him. And this was probably one of the saddest in the collection, just because you are having to see this boy in his loneliness and how he navigates the world, but also the dark side of falling in love and what that looks like. So yeah, that was really fun. And the second story that I really liked is called Shucked. And it's about a young gay couple that are on their first romantic vacation together. And they find themselves walking into a bar and meeting an older man that offers them a large sum of money for the boyfriend's time. He asks for like an hour or something like that. And the question that is very apparent at the end of it is the boyfriend that has returned the same person or not? We don't know. And this one was very, very creepy. And I did listen to the audiobook, 5 stars. But this does a good job exploring like the human desires as well as what we consider compromising versus settling in the context of like a romantic relationship. Because I do feel the line is very thin between the two. And this one, I read it maybe, I think, 3 times, if I remember correctly, just because it took that many times to really understand it. And when I did, it was a very nice payoff. So I highly recommend it. But yeah, that's Boys, Beasts, Men by Sam J. Miller.
Wow, I haven't heard of this one.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. And also, let me just show you the cover. It's like gorgeous.
Oh, that is really pretty. I feel like that name sounds familiar. He's written a novel, right?
Yes, The Blade Between, I think
Yes.
it's called. Yes, which is very iconic. Yeah, highly recommend him.
My final pick is Lakewood by Megan Giddings, and the comps for this are essentially like The Handmaid's Tale meets Henrietta Lacks. I'm forgetting the full title of that. I'm sorry. This is about Lena, whose grandmother has died, and she is a millennial, and now she has figured out and come to terms with like their financial reality and how much debt her family is actually in. Like, this is something that was kept from her. Like, they didn't want her to worry. But now, in the wake of this death, it has now kind of become her responsibility. So she finds a job that seems really too good to be true. She's going to be a part of a secret program that's going to help research for different products, things like eyedroppers that will make your eyes blue, or a pill that will make bad thoughts go away. And I will say, tonally, when she gets to the facility and starts, she's essentially like a guinea pig. Like, she's taking these treatments and they're seeing what the side effects are to these. So those chapters are very fever dreamy. They really get into the surreal as she like loses touch with reality and what's going on and what is happening to her. And as you can imagine, there is a dark secret behind what is going on behind all of this. But this, it serves as a metaphor for the medical experimentation that was put on black bodies throughout history, you know, much like, you know, Margaret Atwood said of The Handmaid's Tale, like, I didn't write about anything that hadn't already happened to, like, you know,
Like in our
black or
world.
indigenous women or minorities. And these are, you know, horrors that have been perpetrated on these bodies in the name of science and advancement and, you know, like what that happens and taking advantage of financially vulnerable people and what you are willing to do when you are the one that has financial responsibility in your family and what that stress will do to you and what you are willing to sacrifice. And are you even fully aware of what that sacrifice is?
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And you were referencing the immortal life of
That's it.
Henrietta Lacks. Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
You saw the movie with Oprah?
I haven't.
Oh my God, girl. If you need a good
Okay.
cry, if you need a good cry, and Oprah does fantastic work in that.
Okay. All right, I'll watch it.
Yes.
All right, so that was Lakewood by Megan Giddings.
Okay, so for my final pick, which is probably top three favorite books of all time, and I think everyone and their mom is probably aware of this book, or at least it's safe to assume so, but that is Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado. And she, what can I say about this book? Oh my God. So this collection does have eight stories, and it does a fantastic job at showcasing what does female desire look like, or abuse and motherhood, but also expectations society places on women, and as well as queer relationship that center around women. And Carmen takes genres like science fiction and horror, even magical realism, and she kind of blends them into tales that are very sharp and heartbreaking at the same time. But two stories that I want to talk about. First one is Inventory. And this is where we follow a young female protagonist navigating through a pandemic. But the whole story is told in sex scenes. So you just get like these like little chunky paragraphs that kind of make you travel through time. And again, they're all very sexually explicit. Some of them are a little disturbing to read. But this was a very like refreshing, but it was a very interesting way to tell a story. And I love that in just like, what, 20, 30 pages, you travel through years of this. So it's a lot to chew on. And yeah, and then the second story, which hit a little close to home for me, but it's called 8 Bites. And this story, we follow a woman that gets her bypass surgery, and you get to see what her relationship with her body is like, and how it affects her relationship with her daughters. And I really like this because, like, I talked about this story with my mom because she had bariatric surgery, and growing up, I got to witness what, like, the treatment she was receiving when weight was, like, coming off, you know, and especially being, you know, a Mexican child, you know, her mom, my grandma, you know, did a lot of shaming towards her about it, you know, and then, but also saw other people, like, giving her props, like, oh, you look so good, congrats, whatever, and so it's this very, like, wishy-washy experience of, like, oh, you're lazy, you didn't do it right, or congratulations, you look amazing, and then while all that is happening, you get to taste what confidence is like, you know, and it's a very interesting, like, thing to experience. But also, I never had bariatric surgery, but I did myself lose a good chunk of weight where I got to taste some of what my mom went through. And it really brought up a lot of good discussions between the two of us. And I even gave her the book to read. And I told her, if anything, just read 8 Bites, you know. But yeah, this was my favorite story in this whole collection. So, but yeah, that's Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Rita Machado.
I love that. Oh, I love this collection so much. And it's tough. I feel like there's just no right way to exist in a body, and
correct.
I don't know. Correct. I've been so many different weights in my life, and there it is, mm-hmm. like that. There's that part of it also, like when you lose weight and mm-hmm. you notice how much differently you get treated.
Yes, yes.
And then you mourn for the injustices of your past self.
Correct, correct. But also, like when you lose weight, or so let's say you have bariatric surgery, the fatness, quote unquote, still kind of haunts you because you still have like the scars perhaps, or maybe even like the loose skin, or you have a box of clothes you can't seem to get rid of and they're all your bigger clothes. Like that still is apparent in your life even after losing the weight. But Carmen, I was watching an interview with her, and she brought up a really good idea of how like your body is this thing that like protects you, mm-hmm. you feed it and it nurtures you. It gets you through the day. It can take a lot of shit from society and people and life itself, but also your body fails you. You know, it retains weight. Some days you wake up weak, some days you wake up strong, and it's very like gaslighty, I guess, relationship one could have with their body. And Carmen does a good job at showcasing that in this collection.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And especially if you have a chronic illness or something and you really yes. have to measure out how much energy you're going to have throughout the day for just normal tasks.
Exactly.
A lot. I think my favorite is the opening story, the husband stitch. That's for all our creepy, scary stories to tell in the dark girls.
Yes, yes. I agree. That was a very strong way to start this mm-hmm. book, honestly. And I was listening to this podcast where Maria explained what the husband stitch, like what that term comes from. I think people should just do the research themselves and look it up. Mm-hmm. But it was a very clever way of like taking, very Taylor Swift-esque of taking that and like redoing it and making it a bigger thing, a better thing even in the context yeah. of this. So
oh definitely.
Yeah.
Well, are we ready to talk some chilling obsessions?
Oh yes, please.
Oh my god, what have you been enjoying lately?
Oh my god. Okay. Well, there's two things I want to talk about, if that's okay.
Go for it.
So the first one is a movie called Talk to Me. It's an A24 film. So you know it's gonna be good. And we follow a group of teens that discover an embalmed hand, and they figure out how to conjure ghosts with it. And with this experience comes like a thrill and euphoric effect they quickly become addicted to. And this movie is very, very graphic. So you've been forewarned, but it is a good allegory that discusses like drug abuse, young adulthood, and even grief. And I had to go to the theater a second time just to watch it again because I like very much enjoyed it. It was worth the money. And I think people who are in love with, you know, standard horror would really get a kick out of this because it hits all the check marks for everything. So
okay. I rented this because mm-hmm. I saw that it was your chilling obsession. And I wanted to be able to talk to you about it. Also, it had been on my to watch list forever. I'm sad I missed it in its theatrical run. Mm-hmm. But I watched it while I was working and I was squirming, looking away from the screen so many times.
Yeah.
And it is such a good like metaphor for drugs mm-hmm. just because of how they feel afterwards and mm. like the main character Mia mm. you know could be seen as someone who has like a genetic predisposition to like
want to go
a little further than everybody else and need it and go to mm-hmm. like whatever lengths to do this, but in the context of grief and wanting to the possibility of talking to her mom again.
Oh my god, those scenes with her and her mom in the bed, I won't say anything further after that, but I don't know if you remember, but it was very creepy but like sad at the same time.
Like, wait, is that the one where like the ghost is like crawling in and
no no it's where her and her mom just lay in the bed and her mom like holds her. Aww. Yeah, and it was like very creepy because it's a freaking a ghost cuddling with you, but it's also like Mia like embraces that because it's her or an image of her mom and she wants nothing more than that. So like it's a very cathartic experience to be scared and sad at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a lot, and that ending had me like oh,
I was shooketh. I was gagged, my jaw was on the floor, but like that ending was such a good punch. That's why I needed to see it again because I wanted to feel that in my chest again. So, but yeah, I highly recommend it.
It was really good. Yeah. Oh my god, I want to buy The Hand. They sell it on the A24 website, but it's like $100-something.
Yeah, and it'll just sit on my shelf collecting dust.
I would never like even playfully shake it because of the movie, even mm-hmm. though it's like a mass produced. It's our Mexicanness. Like,
yeah,
it's been read into us. Like, don't do that. Don't mess with that.
Yeah, even if
not enough that I would still buy it, but I just wouldn't go that far.
Yes, like I think I would maybe buy it, but I would not touch it by any means.
Yeah,
I would have someone else with gloves, maybe. but yeah, it's our heritage, man. It's like we know that's too close to comfort.
Yeah, I'm like I don't really know if I believe in any of that, but no.
But no.
Why tempt fate?
Yes, I have no business risking it. Mm-mm. Honestly.
Right. What's your second part of your chilling obsession?
Yes. Okay. This is where we're going to discuss Taylor Swift.
Okay.
And I'm not as sorry about it. But this is the song Right Where You Left Me. And this is from the Evermore album. And the reason why I want to discuss this as a chilling obsession is because I feel it's very easy to look at this song as a ghost story. You know, a ghost story about a woman who is so heartbroken that she's essentially become frozen in time and stuck left wondering and pondering about the relationship that just ended, where the expectation is, especially for women, is to learn from it and just move on. And like, as if it's that simple, you know? And I actually have the lyrics pulled up just to prove my case here. Let me pull this up. So, for example, she says, I'm still at the restaurant, sitting in the corner I haunt, cross-legged in the dim light. They say, what a sad sight. I swear you could hear a hairpin drop right when I felt the moment stop, indicating like time freezing because you're, you know, so heartbroken. Glass shattered on the white cloth. Everybody moved on. I stayed right there. Or another good example is when she says, did you ever hear about the girl who got frozen? Time went on for everybody else. She won't know it. She's still 23 inside her fantasy. How it was supposed to be. Did you hear of the girl who lives in delusion? Breakups happen every day. You don't have to lose it. And this just does a good job at like showing, like, especially when you're young, you're heartbroken, everything is ruined. Like your whole life is in shambles, very dramatic, but we often forget how like even a simple breakup when you're in your youth can still linger. You know, you're still stuck there. Like, oh, what if I did this differently? What if he did this differently? Or what if we did this or whatever? Like there's a lot of what ifs, you know? And you're kind of forced to just stay there in that moment and figure it out. So,
oh my God. Yeah. This is one of my evermore favorites. I think the line where she says, you probably got a wife out there, kids and Christmas.
Yes.
But I'm all alone. Like, I can't. And okay, there was a time on TikTok where people were making edits of this song to WandaVision. And I was crying, scrolling through my phone. Like, I can't do this right now.
Watch, after this recording, you're going to pick up your phone and just go in.
It's going to be the most devastating edits. I have been victimized by a TikTok edit to a sad song.
Oh, same. Why do we like sad shit so much? Do you ever wonder that?
I don't know. I just love feeling. That's why I love horror. I love that it, it transcends. It makes me feel something. I like to feel scared. I like to feel sad. I like to laugh. Just give me feelings.
Yeah, especially when you get to like, when you're forced to think then afterwards and there's tears running down your face. You said that very nicely. We like to feel, you know.
Oh, I have a chilling obsession.
Yes. What is it?
Okay, so I did love Lisa Frankenstein. I said that up top. Everyone needs to go watch it. It was an absolute delight.
Run, don't walk.
Run, don't walk. Give Diablo Cody her flowers. Jennifer's body queen.
Yes.
But I watched a documentary on Tubi called Satan Wants You. And this was about the book that arguably, I don't know if started is the right term, but played a big part in the satanic panic of the 80s, Michelle Remembers.
Yes.
Which was about a, you know, true story, heavy quotation marks, where a therapist and a young woman, and he had her go through this like kind of hypnosis, like regression, like therapy, and she, heavy air quotes, recovered these memories of satanic ritual abuse, and it became this bestseller, and suddenly people were seeing this abuse everywhere, and you know, police forces were trained on how to spot signs of satanic ritual abuse. And it really got into the effects that this book had. And listeners of You're Wrong About and You Are Good will be like very familiar with this. Sarah Marshall did a whole series on Michelle Remembers, and she was a talking head on the documentary, which was exciting. I was like,
cute. Hey. Love that.
Yeah. Sarah Marshall from the Gerald's Game episode. But just how devastating it was. And then in the second half of the documentary, talking to the woman, Michelle Pazdur's family, because Michelle Pazdur did not do the documentary. She refused to comment on it.
Yeah.
Because so this therapist did this therapy with this woman, then left his wife for this young woman. As and they were like doing this book tour together. And so a lot of the second half, and they talked to the therapist's ex-wife.
Ooh.
About all this. It was spicy. I was like,
imagine the tea spills. Oh girl, I have to watch this. Oh my god.
Yeah. It was a lot. So I had a good time with it. So that was Satan Wants You. That's on Tubi. So it is free.
Let me go save that real quick. Perfect. Love that. Do you have a Final Girl song?
Oh, I don't think I do. So no. That's you.
I got you. I got you. My Final Girl song is Play the Part by 2 Feet. I think this is a very underrated song. This is very much a song like your hot boyfriend with eccentric taste in music would probably listen to. This is a really cool song that I wanted to talk about because the lead singer is a guy, of course, but it brings up this really cool image in my head of like him singing, and the lyrics are very much talking about a woman who's not playing the part. And to me, it shows like the part of a victim, you know, and the man is angry, like, oh, you're not playing the part. How dare you? And in my head, I see this like in a movie with the final girl just, you know, wreaking havoc and good for her moment. And this is playing because she's not playing the part that he wants her to, you know, yeah. And it just gave me all the vibes that I needed.
Yeah. So, right, well, I am adding that to the list.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about speculative fiction.
Well, of course, anytime.
It's always a good hangout.
It really is. There's always drinks and books, and honestly, it's the perfect girl talk.
It is.
It really is.
Books in the Freezer is a bi-weekly podcast. We post episodes every other Tuesday. You can find us on Threads, Instagram, and TikTok at Books in the Freezer, or send us an email at booksinthefreezer@gmail.com. Show notes for this episode and all previous episodes are at booksinthefreezer.com, where you will find a list of the books mentioned. You will find a link to the Final Girl playlist that, fun fact, was featured in the acknowledgments of the new Stephen Graham Jones book. Fun. You can also find links on different ways to support the podcast, like affiliate links to Libro FM and Fangoria, among others. There's also a link to the Patreon, where there is a $1, $3, and a $5 level with different perks at each level, if that's something that interests you. But if you're looking for a way to support the podcast without spending any money, might I suggest leaving a review on a site like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And again, thank you so much to all of you who have already taken the time to do that. You have my eternal gratitude. I have been your host, Stephanie Gagne. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time on Books in the Freezer.